My name is Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox, and this is the Constitutional Defense Council that you see here with us today. We're going to go ahead and just start working our way through the agenda. We have, first of all, the approval of minutes from our October 16th meeting. If I could get a motion on that. Go ahead, Mr. Noel, Representative Noel.
I'd move to approve the minutes of
October 16th.
October 16th.
We have a motion. You have a second?
Don't need a second.
We don't need a second. Thank you. I forget. I've been out of the legislature too long. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. The first item on the agenda is the request for reimbursement by Kane County. Do we have anybody here from Kane County? Please go ahead and join us.
Thank you, Lieutenant
Governor. All right,
Governor.
Mike should be on. Yep, go ahead.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. As you're all aware, Kane County has been kind of plowing the road on the RS-2477 litigation, and we've been going on for many years. We began quite a few years before the state or the other counties became involved and have been in the process of setting some, I think, really good precedent. Our legal expenses have been significant. Last year, this board agreed to pay a portion of Kane County's legal expense because we're setting the precedent and all the rest of those cases are on hold. So Kane County has submitted to the Constitutional Defense Council a request for reimbursement as per the formula that was agreed upon last year. And we would respectfully request that we would be reimbursed according to that formula that was agreed upon.
Thank you. It looks like we have a... Okay, there. You're on, Commissioner.
Thank you, Governor. I would like to speak to that as the chairman of the Public Land Committee, Commissioner Pollack. Kane County is very instrumental in this process. I think we have close to 12,500 roads in litigation. The state has that many. That the state is in the process of going through the litigative process on... And Kane County has expended their own funds, which they're a rural county, and our funds are limited in rural Utah. They've expended their own funds. The Public Land Committee supports this. Public Land Committee's been part of this request, and based on that, if there's no questions, I would like to make a motion that we fund this.
Okay. There is a motion on the table. Any additional discussion? On this, trying to see seat five. I'm not sure who that is. Representative King, please.
Thank you, Governor. I wanted to ask whether it's Leland or someone from the AG's office, what's the status of the litigation? Maybe John Harja can tell us or Tony can tell us. What's the status of the litigation? My understanding is that there have been a couple of cases that have come down from the Tenth Circuit that have not been helpful for us on this.
I'll let him speak to it.
You're not on.
The answer to your question is a lot of things are going on right now, and it would take me some time to explain all of them, but very briefly, we have the question that's been presented to the Federal District Court coming out of the suit that was filed by SUA in the Tooele case. A question has come out of that action that raises the issue of whether the 7-year statute of limitation that SUA was seeking to enforce is a statute of repose or a statute of limitation. The three judges in the Federal District Court hearing the active cases have certified that question to the Utah Supreme Court. So we are in the process now. We just barely got we haven't received from the Supreme Court of the state of Utah yet a briefing schedule, although we know it's going to be simultaneous briefing. So that's one thing that's happening. Another thing that has happened is that in the Kane County case, which was the case that was tried in 2011 in the fall, that case was ruled upon by the Tenth Circuit, and there were rulings in that decision that went for the state and the county. There was a ruling that went against the state and the county, and that is a ruling that there has to be a dispute of title to gain jurisdiction under the Quiet Title Act, and that with respect to some of the roads involved in that case, there wasn't adequate dispute as to title. That question is going to, we're seeking Supreme Court of the United States review of that ruling for a couple of reasons. One is that we have a conflict in the circuits now, and the other is that all that does is move the thing down the road, kicks the can down the road, so to speak. It doesn't dispose of the issue, it simply delays the issue. And that in the interim period, the witnesses that we would be required to rely on to prove those roads are dying. And so there is enormous prejudice to the state and the county in delays that would result by reason of this ruling on disputed title. Now, the other thing that is happening is that the court, that is the federal court, on its own has recognized that the magnitude of all of these RS 2477 cases are really more, is really more than the court can handle, is really more than the parties can handle. And I think everyone has recognized that from the beginning, that at some point, after we have the legal principles established, there must be some other way found to more efficiently process the RS 2477 determinations. That was the objective of the case management order that was entered into in all of the cases. And what the Federal District Court has done is just further refine that. And what they have suggested, and they are presently considering, is that in two counties, namely Kane County and Garfield County, which are the two counties that are in active litigation, the others being stayed under the case management order, that with respect to those two actions, Kane and Garfield, that the parties select a limited number of roads. That number has not yet been determined, but we're talking somewhere between probably 15 and 30 roads that would be tried by a special master, and that the roads would be selected based on the nature of the rulings, the legal rulings that would be required to resolve those roads, and that those roads would then proceed through the process of federal court consideration of a recommendation coming out of the special master, and then there would be appeal. The objective being that we finally get Tenth Circuit rulings on all of the critical questions of law, which has been our objective under the CMO. So that ultimately we can come together and determine a more efficient way of processing them once we have all the rules established. So that's where we are. It's convoluted, I agree, but that's nonetheless where we are.
Thank you.
Any other questions, discussion? Commissioner McKee, let me guess here. I think I got the right one. Go ahead.
Thank you. I just wanted to second the motion. Kane County has put a lot of work in this to help us, I think, for the entire state of Utah to more clearly understand what the road issues are and the legal aspects of it, and I think it is a public interest for the entire state, and so I would second the motion.
Thank you. Seeing no other discussion, we'll go ahead and take a vote. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
And any opposed? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes unanimously. Okay, here we go. We're going to go ahead and move on to the next item on the agenda. Thanks. This is a request for funds. Now, I'm assuming this is why most of you are here today. And in fact, I would like to recognize we have several county commissioners as well as sheriffs who have traveled a great distance, many of them further than the 100 miles that I drove this morning. I just want to recognize you all. Would you please stand just so we all know who the county commissioners and sheriffs that are here today? Thank you for taking time to be with us. We appreciate your service. Now, what we're going to do here is we're going to start. I'm going to ask my vice chair here, Representative Noel. He's going to take some time to talk more about this issue, the Commissioner Lyman issue. We're going to give him a chance to do that, to present the information that he has, and then it will be likely, you just need to know, because this is very controversial and there is a potential for litigation on this decision that we recognize, we will likely go into an executive session to talk with our attorneys about the legalities of this request. Okay. Now the unfortunate part of that is that we have to ask everyone to leave the room for a few minutes while we do that. At that point, we will come back in. We will take any additional discussion from the members of the committee, and then pending the request and an actual motion is made, then we would open it up to public comments. So that's kind of the flow that's going to happen today. I just wanted to give you a heads up of how that's going to happen. So with that, we'll go ahead and turn the time over to Representative Noel, and we'll hear from you.
Thank you, Governor. As I present this, I'd be open to questions, too, for clarifications on this issue, and like to hear from other members of the Constitutional Defense Council, both voting members and ad hoc members, too. Many of you are familiar with this case that was brought against Phil Lyman and five other individuals in San Juan County. It involved a closure and a trespass issued to them. The trespass was issued back in May, and five individuals were charged with these, and a trial was set. The BLM in that area had been working with the county for many, many years, probably 7 or 8 years, to work out a Title V right-of-way to go down the Recapture Canyon area, the old Recapture Canyon Road, and to avoid the would you mind picking that up for me back there, that map that you just brought in, to avoid the artifacts that are in that area. They were working with the State Historic Preservation Officer. Mr. Lyman is actually the chairman of the San Juan County Cultural Resources Group. I'm not sure what the name of it is, but he was the chairman of that, and he worked closely with Lori Hunsaker on trying to identify this. The route that they identified, we have some maps of that. It would actually avoid these sites. It would avoid all those areas, and that has been going on for approximately 10 years. So after much frustration and much dealings with the Bureau of Land Management, two individuals went down the canyon in 2005, Ken Brown and his son-in-law. They had permission from the recreation planner to put in six small plastic pipes in the road where the water was washing out the trails there. These roads were open at that time to ATV trails. This is the old existing Recapture Canyon Road, goes back to 1878. They were subsequently charged with construction an illegal ATV. Outside groups came in and challenged the BLM to that they said they were doing this without a permit. They were charged. An archaeological damage assessment was created. It identified, at that time, I have a copy of it here, it identified approximately $350,000 worth of damages. The case, in that case for Mr. Brown, they pleaded guilty, and they were actually charged $35,000 for the damage they did. So the additional $300,000 was damage that had occurred over time on that area from proliferation of OHV vehicles. So it was a concern. There was an issue there. And again, the county and Commissioner Lyman and others, our state worked with them, and the BLM were working with them to establish a legal right-of-way down through that area, avoiding the old trails and the old RS-2477 road, which has never been claimed by the county, to maybe make sure we alleviate this. In 2007, the BLM issued a closure order. It was done legally as far as the closure goes under the OHV statutes, which are the 8300 statutes, and it closed an area of approximately 1,800 acres in the Recapture Canyon. Not all of the canyon, not all of the bottom of the canyon, but an area within there where these cultural resources were located. And that closure was done. And this is probably the key to this entire case. That closure under the OHV statutes is for off-road vehicle use. It's for trails that the BLM created. Those trails were open. They were marked. The BLM was allowing people to use those trails. When this closure was closed, they marked the trails OHV use, no motorized use in that area. So it was open to walking. It was actually closed to bicycles, but people, they didn't really stop people bicycling in there, but it was closed to OHV use. And there really weren't any issues with that from 2007 up until 2014, because I said the county was working closely with the BLM to acquire this right-of-way, and they had talked to them on a regular basis. They'd work with them. So with some frustration, the county commissioner and others, and in fact all three county commissioners at that time, felt like they had to do something. They wanted to hold a demonstration in that area and say this was open. It's been 10 years. And as you noticed in the case that Tony just talked about, we went to court and we tried to get roads approved under RS-2477, and the government comes back. I think in our latest case, they've indicated there's 585 roads that there's, quote, no case or controversy, so we can't go in and present witnesses, and we can't go in and take these to court because there is no case or controversy, and you can't bring the case to court. We, of course, challenge that. It's a very similar issue, not the same, because they haven't claimed an RS-2477 right-of-way. I said they wanted to work cooperatively with the government. So Mr. Lyman put this together, had meetings, et cetera, told the BLM about it, and there was concern about that going into the closed area. They said, don't go into the closed area. Don't go into the closed area. We don't want you to create problems with archaeology. We don't want you to damage archaeology. So Mr. Lyman and those that were involved with it modified their plan to drive on the Title V right-of-way. This Title V right-of-way is Title V, number is 42412. It was issued in 1981. It was reestablished again, and some other additions were to it. This actual right-of-way is the road and the pipeline that comes out of Recapture Dam and goes down the canyon. Previous to this pipeline being put in, that road was approved under the 1866 Ditches and Canals right-of-way. So it was the old canal that the pioneers used and was still using up until the right-of-way was approved to put it in a pipeline in 1981 when the pipeline was approved. The pipeline was actually approved for two pipelines, either two 21-inch pipelines or one 27-inch pipeline with a width of 50 feet. I have a copy of the master title plats, which are essentially the same as your title plats that you have in a county, to go to the county records and see what rights-of-ways are in those areas. If you look at the master title plats in this area, you'll see 40 to 50 rights-of-ways in this area of different types of rights-of-ways, roads, all kinds of different, you know, telecommunication sites, pipelines, cell phone towers. These are the rights-of-ways, Title V rights-of-ways, which took the place of the RS 2477 rights-of-ways in 1976 when Flipman was passed. So prior to that, the way to acquire a road, the statute said the right to acquire roads is hereby given. So up till 1976, starting in 1866 to 1976, all of the roads that were acquired by the counties and the state of Utah were acquired under RS 2477, maybe some of the very highways that you're on. Those were then transposed into Title V rights-of-ways and are grown into them, and that's what we've issued. In my background, one of my jobs in working for the BLM was to grant Title V rights-of-ways. I actually started, issued some of the very first rights-of-ways that were ever issued in Kane, Garfield, and some of the other counties I worked in. So I'm very familiar with the rights-of-ways. There are no reversionary clause in the rights-of-ways. There are stipulations in the rights-of-ways. I have a copy of the file of the rights-of-ways. I've perused that at great length to look at it. There was a full archaeological assessment done. Obviously, if you go in and put a 27-inch pipeline in a 5-foot hole, 5-foot deep hole, and you have a 100-foot right-of-way, you're going to have a clearance. So cultural clearance were done. Threatened endangered species were done. All these things were accomplished in a fashion that allowed for that right-of-way to go forward. So that right-of-way was approved in 81. It had unobstructed use by both the Water Conservancy District and the public for a period of 35 years up until the point when the closure was closed, and the closure goes right up to that right-of-way. Now, why is that interesting? Why is that something that involves this case, and why is it important to the people of the state of Utah? If a closure for OHV travel includes a right, a Title V right-of-way, that means every Title V right-of-way in the state of Utah is subject to that. It could be a right-of-way for a ski lift. It could be a right-of-way for a telecommunication site. It could be a right-of-way for your water line up in the canyon. Most of them are roads. Probably 80% of them are roads. All the new roads in many of these counties, in Uinta County, they've gone in and got lots and lots of Title V roads. All of those rights-of-ways are approved subject to the National Environmental Policy Act, and through cultural resources clearances, through visual resource inspections, through public comments, it went through the entire process. They can be protested by the public. They can be objected to. They can be challenged. But once they're issued, they never go away. Some of them have terms on them. Some of them are in perpetuity. They can be renewed unless there's a problem. One of the things that the federal government has done in this lawsuit case, that they've come to us and they've said, why don't you just forget about all these Title V or these RS 2477 patented rights? That's the difference between a right-of-way and a patent. These are actually patents, like your home's patented. What's the difference between that and a Title V? Title V is a right-of-way. It's given by the federal government, but it's supposed to be a right-of-way that's there forever. So that's the difference between the two. So that we're still fighting these other roads, and many of these roads, they don't want to give us right-of-ways on. So there's the issue there. As far as the archaeology goes, after the ride in May, the State Historic Preservation Officer, Deputy Officer Lori Hunsaker, went down on the ground and examined what happened after the ride-away. Mr. Lyman, at the beginning of that ride, is on video, it's recorded, he went and there was a group of people there, approximately 200 people there, and he said, "We are going to drive on the existing Title V pipeline right-of-way road." Understand, this is in the closure area. It's in a closed area. But the 83 regulations don't talk anything about Title V rights-of-ways. They don't talk anything really about, they talk about trails, and they talk about the purpose of it is to protect resources and cultural resources. That was the whole purpose of the closure. So the public has heard that there's $300,000 damage. They've heard that that Mr. Lyman and his 200 riders drove through archaeological sites and did wheelies and did damage on that. And I'm here to tell you that's absolutely false. We've got witnesses. If you read the Brian Moffley report in the Salt Lake Tribune, he was there at the site. He was on site. He watched him. And I asked him on Trib Talk the other day, Did they go down, and did Mr. Lyman, the group with him, go down and turn around and go back up that existing road that has been cleared of archaeology? And he said yes. I've talked to other people. Derek Dowsett from At Your Leisure rode his bicycle down there, and he took pictures of it, and he was there. I've talked to many, many people. Now, it's also reported that a few people went beyond that, and that's the number, a few. I have no idea. A few people went beyond that. They were not with Phil. They went beyond it because they did that on their own action. So that may be part of a controversy there. Why was not this brought up in court? Why was this not brought to forward in Mr. Lyman's defense? The court and the judge in this court, Judge Robert Shelby, and Jared Bennett, who is the attorney, the United States attorney, argued successfully that the closure was a legal closure, that it closed all the roads, and that the Title V right-of-way, which I have a copy of, which is on the master title plats, which did no damage to any archaeology, which has been there since 1981 and previous to that in the 1800s, approved as a ditches and canal. It's the water for San Juan County. As you all know, we own the water in Utah. We have a right to convey that water. We have a right to put that water where we want. That's why that ditches and canals right-of-way was in there. That's why the federal government cannot be arbitrary and capricious in granting a right-of-way for things like this. And so they didn't do any damage on that road. Mr. Lyman did no damage. But they argued that that right-of-way was closed per the 8300 regulations. Now, this goes a little bit farther than even this. If a right-of-way holder, a grantee, municipality, like the San Juan County Water Conservancy District, is issued a right-of-way, and it's in the grants, it's in the 2800 regulations. That was never even mentioned, by the way, in the charges. Those were not the regulations. The charges were filed under 8300, the OHV charges. If someone is given permission to go on a road, or if the permittee causes damage to be done because of their actions. So the San Juan County Water Conservancy District, let me go back just a little bit. At the top of that road, there's a gate. That gate is open and closed by the district. However, there's a way to get in that road just by going around it. It's just a gate across the top of the old road there. On the morning of the ride, Ferd Johnson, who is the water master for San Juan County, he had given permission to Mr. Lyman to have the demonstration on that road. Not sure that he even had to do that, but he did it anyway. Phil went forward with it, said, yeah, we better have permission to go down that road. He said, absolutely. I'll go down and open the gate for you in the morning. And he testified to this in court, and essentially the federal government said he's lying. He didn't give him permission to go on that road. He didn't have to give him permission to go on that road. They would have a right to go on it. But he did give him permission. And in the statute, it says the right-of-way holder is the one responsible for any damages. So the charges should never have been brought to Mr. Lyman or the four other people that went down that road. They didn't do any damage. They didn't cause any damage to archaeological values. They stayed on the existing road. They did exactly what they said they were going to do. They did exactly what they told the state director of the Bureau of Land Management they were going to do. They did everything right. They came back out. They caused no damages. The charges should have gone to, if there are any charges or damages, the liability goes to the right-of-way holder, to the San Juan County Water Conservancy District. So there's a second point. The judge in the case would not allow them to argue the right-of-way. The jury never had this information. They didn't have any information about there were no damages created by Mr. Lyman or the groups that went down there. All they had was what the judge was allowed them to hear and what the prosecution, the U.S. Attorney's Office, and Mr. Bennett allowed them to hear. They did not hear the truth. Now, in a case like this, where the litigant is the federal government, and it's a criminal trial, there's a law. It's called Brady v. Maryland. It's called the Brady Laws. They have the absolute obligation to give this information to the accused and to the parties that are being charged in this case. The defendants. They not only didn't give it to them, they withheld it from them. Knowingly withheld it, knowingly knew that there was no damage done, and that was the whole purpose of the closure, was to eliminate damage to cultural resources. The road is open today. They're still driving on the road. You could drive down that road. if you wanted to do it and take the chance of getting trespassed by the BLM, I doubt if they do it, because some of the camera people in here today, I know Channel 2 News and Richard Pyatt drove in a vehicle down that road to take pictures, drove with Mr. Shumway down the road. They could be charged for that according to this. They rode in a vehicle. They drove down the pipeline road. They're not being charged. 200 people that went down that road aren't being charged. The only two people being charged in this case are Mr. Lyman, the chairman of the San Juan County Commission, the individual that went down there and went through all the process and talked to the BLM and conversed with him. I have a letter here that to the area manager in that area. We've been working together. We're going to get this thing worked out. There's a phone conversation with Juan Palma. There's not going to be any arrests. There are actually conversations with the sheriff and the assistant U.S. attorney at that time. This is a fine of hundreds of dollars. So how does Mr. Lyman and Mr. Monty Wells, a city councilman and a blogger, the only two people charged in this case, two public officials, it's what you call judicial prosecutorial overreach. You overcharge, you hype up the charges, you get the public inflamed that he created $300,000 worth of damages, and you prosecute them in the press. That's what happened in this case, ladies and gentlemen, and we can prove that in court. And we want to be able to go to the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. In fact, the judge in the case said, I am not admitting evidence on this road, and if you want to appeal it, take it to the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. And that's exactly what we need to do. I'm open for any questions after that, Mr. Governor.
Thank you. We have, let's see, seat 7, Commissioner Pollack. Thanks.
Thank you, Governor. I have an additional comment, and I'm actually going to read a court transcript in Salt Lake City, Utah, Tuesday, May 26, 2015. This is regarding a meeting that I attended regarding RS-2477 litigation, which is roads. Sewell was at the table that day, represented by Steve Block. The governor was at the table. Our attorneys was at the table. I was at the table that day. Representative Noel, I believe you was in the room. This is a comment by Judge Shelby, who was the judge in this case. This is his comment that I have. This is a legal transcript. Judge Shelby. This is his comment. I just wanted to start with a disclosure. Steve Block, on behalf of SUA, Steve Block was at the table that day, also as an intervener into the case, on behalf of SUA. Steve Block and his wife, Kara, are friends of mine and have been for a long, long time. I practiced with Kara at Snow Christensen starting in 1999. My wife and I have socialized with the two of them since that time. We continue to socialize. My son is close friends with Steve's sons. They play on the same soccer team, are in the same school class. We have dinner together, our couples together, and with other friends not infrequently. I don't hear any cases in which Steve appears. He had not entered an appearance and still has not, I don't think, in Kane County. Yet Steve Block was at the table that day. Anyway, I was unaware until this weekend that Steve had entered appearances in any of the road cases. I thought about it over the weekend, and my view is that I needed to make a disclosure about that. But I don't recuse from any matters involving SUA. I don't think I know anyone else that works at SUA. If I do, I don't know who they are. And so long as Mr. Block's not involved in our case, I intend to remain in the case. But I wanted to make that disclosure. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Let's see. Representative King, is that you? Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Governor. I don't really have any questions, but I want to. Well, I do have a question or two. Let me ask you this, Representative. Do you, do you know what the reversal rate is for criminal defendants who appeal their cases to the Tenth Circuit?
About 10%.
No, you're wrong.
Well, I'm not talking about if they get a hearing, if they even get to the Tenth Circuit. I'm talking about if they actually get to trial?
Yes. They go to the Tenth Circuit.
10%.
Let me tell you, 3.7%.
Okay, well, that's fine.
3.7%.
Okay.
Now, I know that you did not attend the trial in person. Maybe some of the folks on the CDC did, all of it, but I wasn't there. And I know this is something that's important for me as a lawyer. Are you a lawyer? I don't think that's a prerequisite to having a judgment, an opinion about this, but I'm just asking. No, Do you have experience litigating cases in federal court?
No, I'm actually a lay person, but I think that's even more important because Mr. Lyman is a lay person, and so we depend on the justice system to explain to us what rights we do have, and justice is not done unless the justice system does explain those rights and the rights that we do have. I am a lay person.
I'm looking forward to our executive session so that we can get some frank counsel and opinion and advice from our legal counsel, because I have a feeling about what that's going to be. And I think that one of the things that is troubling to me about this is we're talking about coming to the assistance of a criminal defendant in a criminal case as opposed to a civil case. Civil cases are what we're concerned about here on the CDC. When we're talking about vindicating the rights of the Utah state government in fighting with the federal government, it's a civil matter, not a criminal matter. That's a fairly significant distinction. I think we'll hear more from our Attorney General about that in executive session, because I just don't think any precedent that comes down from, let's assume that we win, or that it isn't even we, of course. Let's assume that Phil Lyman, if he appeals, wins in the criminal case. He's one of those lucky 3.7%. What help, what assistance does that give us at all when we're talking about the issues that we're talking about involving public lands? We'll find out when we're in executive session from our counsel, I'm sure. But I would suggest to you that maybe there's not a clear correlation there, that something that happens dealing with the Phil Lyman appeal may not really help us much or may not have much relevance at all to our civil concerns that we have. That's an important matter from my perspective.
Okay.
So I'll look forward to our counsel about that, because to the extent that you think that there is going to be precedent that could be helpful for us, that precedent could be damaging for us in, what would it be, 96.3% of the time? So to the extent that anyone here on the CDC believes that it's important to go to the assistance of this criminal defendant, because it could help us in Utah deal with these public lands issue, I would suggest to you that that is unwarranted, that, in fact, 96.3% of the time, we're going to find, to the extent that there's any precedential value to what happens at the Tenth Circuit on this criminal appeal at all, it's going to hurt us. Now, some of my friends, such as Representative Noel and my good friend Representative Ivory, would perhaps question what I'm about to say. But it may surprise them to know I'm sincere when I say this. I think the questions that my fellow representatives have been asking over the last few years about such things as where's the line in terms of the power between the federal government and the state in terms of authority, they're good questions. We have legitimate concerns that we need to express, and powers that we need to assert in our relationship with the federal government. But we need to be wise about and prudent about the choice of battles in that war. In that, I prefer not to term to frame it in terms of battles and war, but in that conflict that exists, that's inherent between federal and state power, we need to be wise about what battles we choose in taking on the federal government. And this is not a good battle to fight. Now, I've been told by many different people with legal knowledge and experience that it's not a good battle to fight. Some of them I'm not going to disclose their identity because I don't think that'd be fair to them. They've told me in confidence, but they are individuals who have experience in this area of the law, which I don't have, quite honestly. I have experience in civil matters outside the realm of public lands issues, but people who do have experience with these public lands issues say this is a bad battle to fight. We should not be rushing to use taxpayer funds to support this particular person in this particular case because it doesn't help us in asserting our state's rights against the federal government. It hurts that cause. And I'm concerned about that. I know you are, Representative Noel, and I appreciate that about you. But we need to be realistic here. I just want to say one thing, one final thing, Governor, and that is, I haven't even talked about the fact that we've all gotten emails and letters and phone calls, voicemails. I've gotten a ton of things from people, and I have yet to hear from one person outside this small group. You're in that category, Representative Noel, and I think some of the other people that I've heard from who are here on the CDC are in this category. But I have yet to hear from one person who thinks that bailing out Phil Lyman, who was acting in his individual capacity, wasn't acting in his capacity as a county commissioner, he made that clear, that they think that this is a good idea to bail him out, basically, as an individual citizen. There is a deep level of outrage that we've all heard from people across this state about the prospect that we would pay the legal costs of a criminal defendant who's been convicted of a crime and, according to the jury who heard the case, knowingly disobeyed the law. I am not interested in sitting here today second-guessing a jury who heard this case. That's not my role. I would submit that it's not the role of any of us here, regardless of how strongly we feel that it may have been a wrong verdict. That's the role of the federal judiciary, and they will hear that case on appeal to the Tenth Circuit. We are overstepping our ground when we want to stand here and bluster and bluff about how terrible and wrong the jury and the judge were in this case. The people who will make that final decision, and it will be a final decision, are going to be the judges who hear this case at the Tenth Circuit level, and they should be left to hear it. So I share the outrage that I hear from just about everyone who contacts me to say, I thought you guys were conservatives up there at the Capitol. Of course, I don't claim that label, but you do, Mike, Representative Noel. You claim the label conservative. I thought you guys believed in self-reliance and taking responsibility for your actions. And this is just grossly inconsistent with that tough-minded talk, they tell me. And I agree with them. This is grossly inconsistent with that. Doesn't Mr. Lyman have a source of funds other than the taxpayer? Can't he? There are all these people that support his cause. Can't he come up with some other money from someplace else? I mean,
can I respond to that?
Let me respond. Number one.
Let me allow him to finish. Are you done, Representative King?
The only other thing I'd say, look, I'm concerned, and I've raised this concern with Mike in these CDC meetings in the past. We need to distance ourselves from people who are supposedly aligned with us on this public lands fight and who give us, people who are legitimately concerned about the role of federal and state government and how our public lands are being managed, they give us a bad name. Folks like Clive and Bundy. And I don't know that you and I agree about that, Representative Noel, but I would suggest to you that if you really think that Phil Lyman needs some money, you go talk to Clive and Bundy because he's been saving a lot of money by not paying grazing fees for, what, 20 years? Maybe he's got the dough.
All right. Representative King, we're never going to, confuse you with the conservatives. So I appreciate you clarifying that everyone who's here and wasn't aware of that. But I'm going to allow Representative Noel to respond, and then I'm going to go to Representative Stratton next.
I'm used to Brian. He's an attorney. I understand that. You're in the category of a mean attorney, okay? You're in that category because you're always kind of mean. In fact, this is your cousin, right? Isn't Phil your cousin? Yeah, you're even mean to your own relatives, so that's kind of mean.
Well, I don't think I'm mean, actually. But I think when I'm on the right side of an issue, I'll get aggressive. You will, too. You and I are alike in that way, Mike.
I will remind us to be civil in our discourse.
Okay, so let's talk about a couple of things. You talked about the 3% appeals. This is a road case. This is a right-of-way case. This is an issue that goes to the very heart of the matter I know you don't know much about rights of ways and what the Title V means, but it's very, very important to the state. It's important to our trust lands. I think you'll hear that maybe in this hearing, how important these are to our trust lands. Our percentage of success at the Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals is probably in the 30% to 40% range. When we take the state of Utah as a sovereign entity and take all the facts and get them out on the table. By the way, your cousin, my friend, a good person, has never asked for one dime. He never went to the court and asked to have an attorney appointed. They appointed him an attorney. He filled out an affidavit. He said, I don't want an attorney. If you go talk to him, Brian, you would find that out, okay? Representative, you'd find that out. He never asked for any money. He doesn't want any money from the state. This is my idea. This is to support an issue that I think is critical to the state of Utah. And so that's why I'm bringing this forward to the council. And the council will make a decision. We've got to make that decision. There's no question about it. But you made several statements in there that are absolutely false. He did not go out and do damage to federal lands. He did none. He stayed on an existing approved right-of-way. He followed the law. He's been working with the BLM for over 10 years. He's trying to get a right-of-way. I guess you didn't hear all those things that your cousin did. You just went for the political soundbite. Thank you.
Representative Stratton.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. I appreciate all that's been said, and I think it's very important that we have a good and frank discussion, that the points are represented. I appreciate my good colleague from Salt Lake County, but I will point out there are times you and I have smiled in that you've been very well aligned with a very conservative perspective from time to time, but we appreciate all perspectives. Thank you. There's two or three points I would like to make. I'd like to, you can maybe come back to me, but I'd like to reserve the right to make a motion.
Please, if that's okay.
But let me make a few comments, if I may. I think that it's very important that we recognize all of us have a stewardship to uphold the Constitution of Utah, the Constitution of the United States, and what we're talking about here is fidelity in relation to that commitment. And I want to make it clear that no matter what takes place, I'm not sensing from anyone that there is a desire to not uphold the rule of law. And I also am grateful for the desire to protect the resources that we have within in our stewardship, the state of Utah, certainly to protect the artifacts, the archaeology, the historical value. And that's very, very important, certainly to me, and I believe I haven't heard anyone say that that's not the case. We are specifically, as it relates to this Commissioner Lyman's issue, that's a micro issue that's related to a macro problem. Some have called his actions civil disobedience, but on a macro basis, really in my mind, the issue is whether or not the road was appropriately and legally closed. That's really the issue. And in that sense, in that light, there is a state interest. There is a public interest. And it may not be, we'll hear from our legal counsel, but there is a public interest here. And I just need to share that in the Commission for the Stewardship of Public Lands meeting last week, we discussed this issue, and a motion was passed encouraging the Constitutional Defense Council to evaluate and take appropriate action on this issue, as it relates directly in the belief of the commission to the constitutional tension between the sovereignty of our state and the dual sovereignty of our federal stewardship and the obligations our counterparts have there. It also goes strictly and straight to the notion that we've been dealing with the 2477 issue. And so those are, we want to make sure that from the commission, I'll just pass on that resolution, that, there is a public interest here macroly. Now, how we deal with this appropriately, civilly, we can vet that and decide. But one thing, two or three observations that I will make. First of all, when we talk about our public lands, we're very concerned about the health, the access, or productivity of those public lands. And part of that productivity is the $8+ billion tourist industry that we welcome the world to come and enjoy the lands and the beauties that are really unique to our landscape and what we have here. That is what we're talking about. How can we best use the resources that are in our care? And we talk about the interaction between the state and the federal, and it becomes very important that the best policy and the best genesis of policy is followed and then adopted. And we feel certainly that there's a balance, imbalance that has taken place over the last several decades. On a macro basis, that then becomes impacts this issue. For example, there would not be trespass if there was an illegal closure by the BLM of that road, and that was something that was not heard. And I recognize, because I am an attorney, and I recognize the very small percentage of criminal cases heard by a jury that are overturned on appeal. But I'm grateful that there is 3.7% that are, because there needs to be that check and balance. And I, no matter what comes from this, we wish the commissioner well in what he's trying to do. But a point that hasn't been brought up is the legal costs that have been paid by the taxpayers of the prosecution. And it's really, in my mind, unfortunate that we're in this circumstance, this situation, that there seems to have been the potential of, certainly some would say, but others would disagree, that there's been a real overreach in a sense to single out and bully these those that have been involved. We could talk about the merits of civil disobedience, but the question is whether or not this was even civil disobedience. But that's not really our place. I just recognize there's been a real interesting dialogue, and I wanted to make two or three points that I think could help. Having said that, I'm ready to make a motion, Governor, if you're ready, that we would move to, but I don't want to preempt any other comments.
Go ahead. The motion's in order.
I would move because I have some specific questions I think that need to be fleshed, and I think this council does as well, to move into executive session so that we can discuss sensitive legal issues.
All right, we have a motion on the table. We are operating under legislative rules, so we do not need a second. I'll go ahead and take a vote on that. All in favor, please say aye. And any opposed? All right, hearing none, we are going to move into executive session again for the purpose of discussing potential or threatened litigation. So we will ask, yes, please. That's correct. You haven't gotten the 1,000 emails I have gotten then, so. I'm sorry, you're out of order. We'll excuse everyone now. I assure you that we have been threatened with litigation on every turn, so thank you. Yes. Yes, please. Hold on, sorry, I'm trying to find you. The numbers are out of order here. There we go.
Thank you. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. My question is, you said we were operating under the rules of the legislature, and any motion that is made is subject to discussion, and you held no discussion on that. That's my point of order.
Thank you.
And you made your ruling, so I guess, thank you.
Thanks. And that's appropriate because he is, they are the requesting entity, so that is appropriate. So. And he's also, as UAC is the requesting entity, they're allowed. Yeah. Yeah, that's fine. We appreciate your patience and apologize for the time consumption in discussing the legal issues here. But I assure you, it was a critical discussion, and we look forward to sharing with you, as we will do now, the points of that discussion. And as a result of those discussions, since the request, as you can see from the agenda, we did have a request for funds from the Utah Association of Counties. We did receive a letter from them requesting those funds. That letter is a public document. I believe that we can distribute that electronically if it has not been done so already. UAC has a copy, and I apologize that we do not have copies for everyone, but perhaps just so we have it in the record, Commissioner Gibson, if you wouldn't mind just reading the letter, and then go ahead. I believe you have a formal request.
Yes. Thank you to each of you as members of the CDC, the Constitutional Defense Council. We are grateful for your effort on this matter and for the time that you have put into understanding your duties and the role that you play representing the state in this particular matter. As you know, I have a copy of a request that was sent to you dated June 22nd of 2015, and I'll read that to you verbatim so that it can be in the record, and then I will provide this copy so that it can be duplicated if you would like. Dear members of the Constitutional Defense Council, per direction of the Utah Association of Counties, UAC Board of Directors, UAC respectfully requests the CDC to appropriate funds in the amount of $100,000 to UAC for the purpose of providing legal counsel, advice, and representation to county officials who face charges for acting to address critical issues in their community with the good faith belief that they are acting within the bounds of the law. Signed, sincerely, Adam Troop, the Chief Executive Officer of the Utah Association of Counties. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to make it clear to you today that the Utah Association of Counties is unified in this statement. Now, as with any organization, unified doesn't always mean 100% unanimous, but we are unified in this statement by overwhelming board vote and by discussion with all of the affiliate groups in our association. We are grateful to have a unified statement here to present to you today. We are working with you as subdivisions of the state of Utah. We are political subdivisions, which means that we are you and you are us. And our goals are the same. Our desires are the same. Our desire is to follow the direction that is given through statute of the state of Utah as presented to us, as passed by the House and the Senate and signed by the governor. And those are the types of things that you will find us out advocating for as county elected officials. We are very concerned that the direction that this that has been taken recently has moved away from civil action, which is already disturbing, where we're put in the situation of having to have legal action against NGOs and the federal government to defend the policies of the state. That is disturbing enough. It has been a tremendous drain on the taxpayers of our state and upon the taxpayers of our individual counties. But what concerns us even more is when that action then moves into the criminal arena, where these same activists will overreach and put us into a situation where individuals who are elected to represent their constituents cannot do their job acting within the bounds of the law in good faith that they're acting within the bounds of the law without facing criminal prosecution. We are very concerned, and that's why we brought forward this particular case at this time, or this particular request at this time. We are grateful that you heard us. Representative Noel, we thank you for your willingness to stand up for something that we think is extremely important. We thank the members of the council for studiously and judiciously looking into the responsibilities that you have, for working so hard to represent those who you represent. And we recognize, after this meeting that we just participated in, that there are some challenges with our request and with the way that this is proceeded. So while we continue to have the same concerns and we continue to support Commissioner Lyman, we do believe in this case that it's appropriate to separate the two issues. And with that being said, we hope that you will continue to discuss the details of how we might address this particular concern that we have of representation for county and state officials who act to address those critical issues with the good faith belief that they are acting within the bounds of the laws. We hope that you will continue to address that in a forthright manner in this council and in the halls of state government, wherever that may be. But we hereby, through this, after this discussion, request to withdraw this particular request at this time so that we can move forward with a separation of these two issues. Now, that being said, I hope that no one takes that as a statement that we do not agree with the concerns that have been shared here today. We just want to make sure it's done appropriately, and so we hereby request withdrawal of this particular petition.
Thank you, Commissioner. Duly noted, and we will consider that withdrawn at this time. Thank you. Commissioner Whitney.
Yes. Lieutenant Governor, Honorable Board, thanks again for your time today. It was crucial. It's an important time, a change in events. I don't want to be redundant on what President Gibson said, but with all due respect to the judicial system and the AG's office and the governor's office and the legalities, we understand that this is probably not the best way to go. So while our withdrawal stands as it is, but I'm going to start by saying, and I hope a whole lot of people stand up behind me, because I believe in Phil Lyman. This is a good man, and he stands for a good cause. He's a great commissioner. He's a good father. He's a good political community leader. And I believe what he did was right out of the health, safety, and welfare of his citizens. So at this time, I'm not speaking on behalf as Mark Whitney, a political and also an elected official, but I'm speaking on behalf of Mark Whitney, a resident of the state of Utah and the great United States of America, and I'm willing to stand up and start a fund right now to put money towards Phil Lyman's defense.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you. Let me take the chair's prerogative, if I could. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this issue has now formally been withdrawn, which means that there is no motion on this issue, and this will not be happening. Let me share, first of all, some of my own thoughts, if I could, some concerns, and then where we go from here on this issue. As many of you know, before I had this job, I was a rural county commissioner in Sanpete County. I still live in Sanpete County. It's been my pleasure over the past few years to get to know Commissioner Lyman. I spent a couple days with him in his county driving around, and it's a big county, and there's a lot of things going on and a lot of concerns that were shared. And I want you to know he is one of the finest individuals that I know. And the state of Utah, the county of San Juan, is tremendously fortunate to have a public servant like him. I can't tell you how much I wish there were more like him. And I also want you to know that if I was in his situation, I very likely would have done the same thing, knowing myself and knowing what you're up against. Unless you've sat in that seat, unless you've served as a rural county commissioner, you have no idea the difficulties that these men and women face every day, the way their hands are tied and how difficult this situation is, how virtually impossible it is to completely represent your constituents in a way that you should be able to do. And much of that has to do, unfortunately, with the laws and regulations placed on us by the federal government. Now, that being said, I have several concerns as I reviewed the case myself. I am an attorney. I was a federal district law clerk. I've worked for a federal judge. I know very much what's at play and what's happening there. And I have some serious concerns about the way the case was handled, about the way it was presented, and about the way it was ruled upon. And I believe that we do have a system in place that will allow Commissioner Lyman to continue to defend himself and to be exonerated. I'm very troubled by the caricature that has emerged, especially in the media, of Commissioner Lyman. It is not true, and I would urge those who are reporting on this to go beyond the headlines and to actually spend some time on this case and do some true investigative journalism, something that we used to have more of, because I think you'll find that there are some difficulties in this case, and it's not as clear-cut as has been made out to be. That being said, there is also a recognition as we look at the legalities of this committee, the funds that are here in this committee, when we look at UAC and the statutory regulations that are placed upon UAC to take these monies, we recognize that there are some difficult legal questions surrounding this, that it is not clear-cut, and that, as was recognized, there is a very, very good chance that there would be a lawsuit. Now, what does that mean? Commissioner Lyman needs to move forward on his defense very quickly. Two issues that can result for this. One, if the state of Utah is hiring an attorney, there will be inherently a divide with that attorney. Okay, he will be being paid by the state of Utah through the CDC, but representing Mr. Lyman, and that conflict is a difficulty for any attorney, and would not necessarily provide for the best defense of Commissioner Lyman. The second part of that is, if there was a lawsuit challenging that could hold up the money and the potential defense for Commissioner Lyman. And so, again, with the advice of counsel from the Attorney General's office, as we talked about, again, the legal nature of this and shared that with representatives from the Utah Association of Counties, they have made the decision to withdraw that request for funds so that legal cloud is not hanging over us, so we don't have to worry about a potential lawsuit on that issue. And at the same time, we would encourage those who agree with Commissioner Lyman, who are friends of Commissioner Lyman, who are friends of those who care deeply about these issues in rural Utah, and specifically, again, a Title V road being closed in a way that has never been done in the state of Utah. That is something that should concern us all, as we have Title V roads in every county, not just in rural Utah, that we will have the Attorney General's office and UAC continue to research those, and if needs be, we will take the fight to the federal government on this issue and others, but that for the benefit of Commissioner Lyman, to give him the best possible defense, that we will donate to him personally, that these monies will be raised privately. I would encourage all of those who again, concur in this issue to donate very generously. I commend these commissioners who have put their money literally where their mouths are, or figuratively, I don't know. We get that wrong every time. But still, I also want you to know that the governor has told me that he will be writing out a check for $10,000, and that this will that we are very proud to support one of our own, Commissioner Lyman, in his defense. I also want to I need to take a second to thank my good friend, a very passionate defender of our state and of our counties, and that is Representative Mike Noel, who, when I became a member of the House of Representatives, he was assigned as my mentor. Now, this is how dangerous that Speaker Lockhart at the time, to put the two of us together, I don't know what she was thinking. We love each other. We respect each other. I look up to him as much as anyone I know. We've yelled at each other toe to toe, even when we're on the same team. And in fact, we're always on the same team. But if I ever get in trouble or anything goes bad, this is the guy I want on my team, because there is nobody that cares more and is more passionate and would more do the right things for the right reasons. And I applaud him for taking on this issue, for being the valiant defender that he is. And I want to turn a little time over to him, and I know he's had a conversation directly with Commissioner Lyman on this. Sometimes these work and sometimes they don't. Representative Noel.
Thank you, Governor. I appreciate that. I strongly support your action. I was probably the sponsor on this to bring this forward to the commission, to the committee here, Public Lands Committee. I think this is a good move. I really do. I don't want this whole issue with this case, this closure of a Title V right-of-way, to get lost in the morass of whether this is a public purpose or whether or not we're using public funds. And that's why I think if we fund this, and myself, I've already told Phil I've got a fat check for him to support him, and I will do that. But I do believe strongly that we are going to move forward on this case with the state, the power of the state, and move forward as sovereigns and say, you know what, you guys cannot, if you really want to work with us like you said you did, and under FLTMA, the Federal Land Policy Management Act, it says you cannot be arbitrary and capricious in granting rights-of-ways. And I've never heard of a right-of-way that was taken away because of a road closure under the OHV rules. We can present that to the case. We can present the fact that Jared Bennett of the Justice Department didn't allow this to come forward, excluded this, said it wasn't evidence that would exculpatory evidence, and we'll bring that forward and make sure that happens. In my discussions with Phil was very, very happy about the decision. Phil feels like he's been under pressure, tremendous pressure. He does have funds, as his cousin said here. He's got funds, and he's been willing. He's paid $45,000 of his own money out of his own pocket. He's dropped his life for a year. I didn't even tell you that right after he was convicted, within a month or two, first time in his life as a CPA, he had a full IRS audit for 2 years. He asked him, he told him the situation he was in, that he's under indictment, he's trying to fight this one case, and they said, no, you're going to move forward. He told him the situation in his family, and he said, no, you move forward. He's totally cleared in that audit. He had no problems with it, but he's been under a lot of pressure. It's unfortunate that people here make decisions about people just because of what they read in the newspaper. And it's unfortunate that newspaper doesn't bring those real things about people out, and the kind of people they are and the decent people they are. I got a chance to meet his son, Dane, today. He's heading down to medical school in Florida. His older son is a doctor, or is in medical school, his last year of medical school at the University of Utah. They want to go out and serve rural Utah and help people. He's got a daughter serving a mission right now in Korea. He's got a son ready to go on a mission to Las Vegas here, Reno, Nevada here, not too long from here. He's a good person. He's a great person. He's a community person. He doesn't own an ATV. He's never been an ATV rider. He has never so much as collected a pot shard off the public lands. What he did was solely in the interest of the people in his community, and had he not been a county commissioner, he would not be in this situation. So I appreciate all the support on this committee, the things that you said. And I talked to Kevin Carter from Trustlands. They got a letter to us from the Trustlands. They told us how absolutely critical it is that these Title V rights-of-ways are maintained and protected to allow access to their public lands, to minerals, to recreational opportunities. And don't think they haven't closed them down to all the people that go out and recreate. 1,000 miles were proposed to close down in the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument, over 1,000 miles of roads. We've stopped that. We've held that off. King County's held the line on it. Garfield County has. Those are the people that get to access those areas and get to go out there on that land, that beautiful land that we all own and respect. So you're not getting the full story. As far as lawsuits go, I've heard a lot of griping for the last several months about the dollars that are spending $100,000 for this. I've never heard one word about the millions of dollars that are spent by the federal government to prosecute people unjustly. I've never heard a word about the millions of dollars that the fund called the Equal Access to Justice gives to groups like SUA, has sued us more than any other group, single group in the state of Utah, about Friends of the Earth and about the Sierra Club that have sued us and get paid for suing us, get their reimbursement for attorneys making hundreds of thousands of dollars. I've never heard anybody complain about that, but you complain about giving $100,000 to defend a right on an open road. It doesn't compute with this guy. You know, they say that a friend is a true friend that'll come down to court and bail you out, but a real true friend is a guy that'll be there in court with you and come down to jail and bail you out. But a real friend is a guy that'll come down there and say, "Dang, wasn't that fun, Governor?" That's all I had to say.
Thanks,
thank you.
Representative. Commissioner Pollack.
Governor, thank you. I'm not trying to grandstand. I'm not trying to one-up any of my colleagues, commissioners, or legislative members. I've been with this from day one with Commissioner Lyman. I supported him on day one. I support him now. I'd like to add to this cause of my own money, not public money, $1,000 here today from my own money. Now, I'm not flushed with money. I'm from rural Utah. But let me just, as a personal privilege, if I may, Governor, I've just got a comment with this whole issue. Phil Lyman stood in front of his people and his constituents down in a little town called Monticello, and they all looked at him. They all looked at him for help, begging to do something about closed roads, begging to do something about what the travesties and the crimes that were committed against their little community, against the Red family. And we all know the story there. I don't care what you read in the paper. A good doctor took his life. Now, I could care less what the Tribune says. I know what happened. Okay, Phil Lyman stood up in front of his people, and he said, "I'll help." And he was acting on their behalf, the people of San Juan County's behalf, as a county commissioner. Now, let me tell you about closed roads. There isn't a rural county commissioner in this room that doesn't have to give permission or go on closed roads. Most of them are closed. Thanks to special interest groups, thanks to the BLM, thanks to the Forest Service. We go on roads to save lives. We go on roads to put out fires. We have to have access to this land. 93% of Garfield County is federal land. I was in a little town of Escalante the other night where there was the same thing, people looking at me. Okay? A little town of Escalante in Garfield County. They're down to 51 kids. 7th through 12th grade. Now, I know the Tribune says that's not true either, but it is. You can get on the Garfield County School District website and find, yes, it is a problem. There's 51 children, 7th through 12th grade. Those Escalante people looked at me for help. What do we do? 20 years ago, there were 139 kids, 7th through 12th grade. Now they've dwindled down to 51. These are the issues rural county commissioners face every day. So that's the reason I support Phil Lyman. because he stood out there. He stood out there. He put himself on the line, and he'll go to prison for his cause to help us. I applaud Phil Lyman. He is a friend of mine, and I am a true friend to him, and I'm supporting him with my own money.
Thank you, Commissioner. Let's go, Representative King.
I move that we take public comment. We have all heard. I've heard from a lot of people on the CDC. I haven't heard from one person in the public who has expressed a contrary viewpoint or a viewpoint that reflects the voluminous communications I've gotten on this point. I'm requesting you, Governor, to go to public comment.
Okay. We have a motion to go to public comment. I would like to, if possible, hear from the remaining members of the CDC on this, and then we can take up your motion. Is that a possibility, Representative? Are you willing to do that?
No.
Okay. We will go ahead, and I have another. Let's see, Representative Noel.
Make a substitute motion that we continue discussion with our committee. We hear the members of this committee and what we've done and accomplished, and then we can go to public comment.
Okay, we have a substitute motion before us. Any discussion to the motion? The motion is that we continue with the remaining of the blinking lights before we go to public comment. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
The ayes have it. So we will continue with discussion from members of the CDC, at which time we will then go to public comment. So it looks like I have Representative Stratton.
Thank you, and I'll seek to be brief and appreciate and look forward to hearing from our public and all concerned citizens, and certainly respect the wonderful blessing of freedom of speech that we have in our country. Two cautions that I want to highlight. Number one is how important it is that we, in today's time and age, that we're careful and cautious not to convict by accusation. Convict by accusation. One of the great blessings that we have in this country is we have a judiciary, that wonderful branch. But as inherent as the right to bring a cause of action is a right to appeal the determination of a lower court. And I would submit to the body and those that are here that it is true. There has been a case that's been brought, it's been tried by jury, but that doesn't mean that there's guilty here. And we need to be very, very careful. It does mean that the jury has stated, according to the rules have been laid down by the presiding judge in that case, that there is guilt here. But there's concern about the transition from civil actions turning to criminal and the motivations behind that. We have a dual sovereignty between the state and federal counterparts that are played. Very important to have that healthy tension. But it is clear that we really have some imbalance in that sovereignty of each political body. As we address and move forward, we have a clear public interest. I don't want this to get lost, Governor, in what we're talking about, but there is a public interest here on whether or not that the road in Recapture Canyon was properly closed. And we have a duty as this council to do all we can to support the proper fleshing. So I appreciate the commitment by the executive branch to flesh that out, and I look forward to the feedback that will come from that. But that being said, may I again caution us all as we look at the notion, because accusations for political motivations are frequently made in this day and age and in this sphere of dialogue that we're engaged in the public sector. I would ask, has there been as much scrutiny given to the funds that have been expended on the prosecution side? Those are taxpayer funds on this issue. And I appreciate and I will defend to the end every person that has contacted me expressing great concern about using one penny of taxpayer money to defend. But what about the hundreds of thousands of dollars and even millions, the group of attorneys, of public taxpayer money that was used to prosecute? We need to look at both sides and give both sides a fair vetting. But I look forward to hearing from our public. Thank you, Representative, for that motion.
Thank you. And I'm not seeing any additional comments from the CDC. So we'll go ahead and move on with the agenda. I haven't been notified of any other business, which would take us into the public comments section of the agenda. So I'll ask the representative from UAC if you wouldn't mind vacating the public space. Thank you. And I would like to again, I would like to remind everyone that there is no motion before us, but I think it is there. Yeah, make sure you get that money on the counter where it needs to go, so we're not leaving tips for public comment. Let's see by the raise of hands those that would like to comment publicly, if I could. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay. Let's go ahead and we'll go 2 minutes each. If you could, please come to the podium and state your names. Those that have raised their hands, give us your 2 minutes. We'll have a timer here and try to let you know. And we'll go ahead and move. Make sure you state your name for the record as you come up. Come on up, Commissioner Miller, and then we'll just go on down the road.
Okay, I want to take these 2 minutes and just express a couple things that I feel very important that need to be said. I'm going to join with many of my fellow friends and many others who are aware of the facts of this situation and contribute some of my own personal funds towards helping this case out. I do think that on a more macro, broad scale, that the state of Utah does have an interest in general when it comes to cases where we have judiciary discretion at the federal level that is challenging the authority of local duly elected officials who do, in fact, represent those people whom they are elected to represent. And further, they take the same oath that judge takes to uphold and defend that same Constitution that we're so fortunate to live under in this wonderful land, in this wonderful state. And both of those constitutions lay out for us a guideline and a roadmap wherewith and under which we can succeed as a society. And these rules are critically important. And I think it's so valuable that we do have these public processes. But I do want to close my comments by saying that it is incredibly inspiring when I see my fellow friends whom I've got to know across this state, some on this board, some sitting behind me, come up with their own funds to help in a situation where they know the facts of this case. And it just it lends evidence to the reality that this good individual was standing as a commissioner in his capacity. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'll throw down 200 more.
Thank you, Commissioner.
And I'll take it out of the way.
Thank you. Thank you. Please, next up, please state your name.
Yeah, my name is Patrick Shea.
Thanks,
I'm
Patrick.
I'm an attorney here, and I've taught constitutional law, jurisprudence, administrative law, and federal election law, both at BYU Law School and the University of Utah. I think the Utah Association of County has failed to make a very important distinction. I also was the attorney that represented Tim DeChristopher, who did an act of civil disobedience, was punished by a $10,000 fine, spent 2 years in a federal penitentiary, and is still on probation with a judge who will not allow a judge where he's presently in school to take over the probationary rule. A purely political motion, and I think we need to be very careful. And Representative Stratton, I want you to pay particular attention to the distinction between civil and criminal law. When I sat down with Tim immediately after his act of civil disobedience, I said, did you intend to do this and accept the consequences of your punishment? And he said, yes. I interviewed him a second time just to confirm that. I have not seen nor heard Commissioner Lyman take on a role of saying, I'm going to be held responsible for the acts I've taken. And the concern I have, and this is where the Utah Association of County needs to rethink their position, is I believe fully that a civil remedy was available on that road. If, in fact, there was illegal, under civil standards, a closure of that road, then that was the route he should have taken. But instead, particularly after the Clive and Bundy standoff, I've talked to BLM law enforcement, I've talked to the Clark County law enforcement. Had there been a single backfire at the Bundy Ranch, there would have been bloodshed. Had a single ATV in Recapture Canyon backfired, there could have been blood with small children riding on these ATVs. We have a civil responsibility to make sure that we don't do that. Now, George Washington faced a similar problem with a namesake of mine, the Shea Rebellion, and he, in no unquestioning way, said federal law needs to be supreme or we will not be a United Nations.
Thank you, Mr. Shea. Next up, please, Commissioner.
Commissioner Bushman from Paiute County. Contrary to my good friend, Mr. Shea, I was actually at Recapture Canyon May 10th, 2014. I know exactly what went on. It was not an act of civil disobedience, as Mr. Shea would suggest. I believe with all my heart and mind that Phil Lyman thought he was acting in the best interests of his county. Contrary to Mr. King's comments that he was not acting as a county commissioner, he absolutely was acting in his capacity as a county commissioner, and I cannot believe he would say that in a public forum. I believe that Phil Lyman approached this in all sense that he thought he was within his legal rights and that this was not an act of civil disobedience. And with that, I would like to throw in on this pool my own money.
Thank you, Commissioner. Next up, please.
Me too. I'm Commissioner Heaton from Kane County. Governor, I'd just like to maybe step back just a little bit from this issue and point to something that is maybe even more important. And this is a very historic moment in time. A few years ago, a public agency training meeting, the trainer said that this is what they used to do in old times. He said they used to ride into town and they crucified the first six people they saw, and after that they didn't have any trouble. I get the sense that perhaps that's what's happening here. You've got an elected official who was not charged with trespass, but was charged with conspiracy. That conspiracy basically consisted of his right to conduct an open public demonstration. And it doesn't matter which side of the cause you're on. You ought to take a good look at a judge who would suppress the right of free speech and the right of assembly. I share Mr. Shea's concern about the possibility of bloodshed, but what you have to know as a student of history is this. When the right of free assembly and speech are curtailed, the reason the Founding Fathers gave us a Second Amendment was when the First Amendment failed. I am terrified of that prospect. I think we need to do everything we can to make certain that the courts in this land uphold the First Amendment of the Constitution, the right of assembly and speech. I don't think that right was granted here. I think it is an intentional intention to suppress those rights going forward.
Got 20 seconds, Commissioner.
It's a very chilling thing for a county commissioner to see a fellow county commissioner acting in the pursuit of his duties to be placed under prosecution, especially a felony, for doing what he has the right to do under the Constitution. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you. Okay, that's time. Anyone else? I think those were the – I saw maybe two more hands on this side. There we go. Yep.
Thank you, Governor. Thank you, Mike, for bringing the facts out about this case. I'm Dennis Blackburn. I'm a Wayne County Commissioner. I'd also like to donate my own personal funds to this and some of Neil Horvath's personal funds. Brian, I'm looking forward to the King reunion. I hope you're going to be there. You're going to have a lot to talk about. I'm going to cook your meal. I was at the Bundy standoff that day. And as far as I'm concerned, what's happened to Phil Wyman is nothing more than retaliation for what happened at the Bundy standoff. I support Phil Wyman. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
I'm Carolyn Wiggins. I don't belong to any group. I'm not a commissioner. I just happen to be a taxpayer. And I really think that you all need to stop and take a look at where you're putting the money. My opinion is that you all are kind of schizophrenic when it comes to the federal government. And I don't think that we needed to spend $1 to defend Lyman against anything. He made choices that day, and you take responsibility for the choices that you make. And I'm glad all of you carry $1,000 around in your pocket. I think that's really incredible. And I'm so glad that all of you have decided that you're going to spend your own money to defend him, and that's your right. But as far as I'm concerned, not $1 of my money is going to go to that. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Commissioner.
Alan Gardner, Commissioner, Washington County. I'd like to add my money to that as well. I think everything's pretty well been said, but I do have a grave concern that this has been filed or charges against an elected official trying to do his job. It raises concern to every commissioner in the state for actions like this, and I think we need to stand up and to fight it, and I'm willing to put my money towards that. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. I think I saw two more. Go ahead.
Sure.
Yeah.
My name is Greg Todd, Commissioner of Duchesne County. I'm here on two different aspects. Chad Booth and Rhea Booth are on their way to Duchesne to do a movie show, and so they asked me if I would say a couple of words. They're donating $700. This donation is on behalf of Chad and Rhea Booth, as they are concerned about suppression of evidence in this case and the implications of the conspiracy charge has on the freedom of the press in the case of Monty Wells. They really wanted to be here, but I told them to cancel, and they said, no, we need to do our responsibilities, so they're up fly fishing in the High Uintas, I guess. So, also, as representative of Duchesne County, would like to support this opportunity to support our fellow commissioner. As a commissioner of a few months, I can see that there's a war, and we receive those comments from lots of people. There's a fist fight out there, and it's pretty hard. Not only with the federal government, and in our case, we have problems with the tribe and things that are going on there. And so we feel and understand the significance of this. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. I think we have one more.
Sheriff Rick Eldridge, I'm the sheriff of San Juan County. And, you know, just days before this event took place, this protest, I actually met with federal law enforcement. And it was decided that this event could in no way become a Bunkerville, Nevada. And that I told them, as long as you will leave this up to the county sheriff, things are going to be just fine. And they agreed. This was a very peaceful protest. It's been indicated here that if there was a backfire of an ATV, that somebody would have shot off a gun and all hell would have broke loose. That's not true. Very peaceful. People exercising their Second Amendment right. Had lots of citizens there. And I'm very grateful that we have good citizens in San Juan County that will exercise that right. Like I said, very peaceful protest. In fact, the majority of the group had gone down to the end of the pipeline road, and we left. Sheriff and his deputies and the deputies that were sent over from other counties, we walked out because it was so peaceful. And we left the protest, and things wrapped up. So very peaceful. And Phil is a very good man. He's standing up for his county, and I think he's standing up for the state of Utah. And it's not a lot, but I'm going to donate my cop's wages to Phil as well. Thanks.
Thank you, Sheriff. We have, I've been notified. Oh, please, yes, yes.
I'm Derek Dowsett. I'm the producer for the county seat. I was at that protest. Had a real hard time breaking apart at it because I've been reporting it. I have been close to this. And that's why I also wanted to give some of my own money to this cause, because I think from the point of view where Monty Wells was talking about this event, and then to be charged with conspiracy is just wrong. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, please, yep.
I'll be brief. My name is James Ebert. I wasn't planning on talking today. I'm a pretty new commissioner, and I'm working my way through the process of figuring out exactly what I'm supposed to do as an elected official. And my biggest concern with this, I don't know Commissioner Lyman. I sat next to him for probably 45 minutes and didn't know it was him, which is my bad. My concern is the chilling effect it's having on me as a new commissioner as I learn what I'm supposed to be doing and representing my constituency and moving forward. I am concerned with special interests, even if they're the federal government, that are overreaching, second-guessing my decisions in moving my county forward and representing my citizens. That's where my concern lies. I know that we need to go in a different direction. It's been a great opportunity for me to see the dialogue and how these decisions are made. But as a new county commissioner, I'm extremely concerned on how we move forward now in representing the needs and concerns of our county. So I'm appreciative, again, of all the work that's been done here, of all the different ideas. But we have some serious concerns on how we move forward, both rural and into the urban counties, on dealing with these types of issues. So I don't carry around a bunch of money. I do have $100 here to donate that I had to borrow from another county commissioner. So I now owe another county commissioner. I will not tell which county or which county commissioner.
Which county are you from?
Weber County. So thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Commissioner. All right, Carrie. You know, in light of this, again, I just to summarize, I think where we are, the AG's office working with UAC is going to continue to look at the issues surrounding this, and continue with their investigation on what happened and looking at a potential lawsuit there. We appreciate those that have donated to Commissioner Lyman. I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
We have a motion to adjourn. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.